I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about the gift of free time and what you do with it. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Here's our topic. Because life is surprising, you're suddenly faced with the gift of free time, time unbounded by work obligations. You might be saying to yourself, oh, yeah, right, I wish I could have that situation. The key question is, what do you do with time you're given? Life can be surprising, as I said, and you might find yourself faced with this. Here's why we're asking this question, because we have mythology versus the reality of what to do with tons of free time. How do we talk about ourselves when we're not defined by our work? Work can be identity, but is it? As we said earlier, free time can be yours because of an inheritance, marrying somebody wealthy, being downsized, or choosing to quote unquote retire. The point is this stuff can happen at any age. So we're asking you to call in and tell us about how you might have chosen to spend your free time. That choice appears after a while because we become bored or feel like something's missing. We meet people who seem to have this clear purpose and meaning in their lives, and then we want it too. The question is, how do you get it? My guests are Gina Bereka, professor of literature at the University of Connecticut, a longtime contributor to our show, and I urge you to read Gina's new column in the Hartford Current, in the paper and online, about Mother's Day. Her theme is having a mother who didn't love you. It's exceptional. And with us, Marion Roy, a special education advocate who does educational workshops for preschool teachers. Thanks so much to the two of you who are being with us. Gina, let me start with you on this. Do you think at the bottom of all of this, raising this question of what do we do with valuable free time, is a primal fear that no matter how much time we have, 24 hours or 200 years to live, that you just don't want to come to the end of your time and say, what did I do? Why did I waste that time? What if I wasted it? Do you think that's at the bottom of all this?
I think that the idea of time as having a value is an interesting point to start with. We could go back to a very old concept of important time versus sort of useless time. It's kairos and chronos. Chronos is ordinary time. Kairos is important time. It's the way that Greeks thought about things. So that there are moments when time matters because everything comes together when you're really thinking about something, when you're doing important work, where it is time that actually is working towards something that is greater than yourself, where you're part of something that has a larger meaning. Chronos, like chronology, sort of chronological stuff, it's just the time that goes. And so what I think that we're talking about at the basis of all of this is all time important time? How do we value time? When we even talk about, think about the phrase free time. It's like, is it time without value, or is it time that's been let off the leash? Those are two very ways of thinking about free. Is it free because there's so much of it that it doesn't matter, or is it free because it's liberated, it's glorious, it means that we're really, you know, inventing it on our own? So I think that, you know, free here, for me, the idea of free time means that somebody else isn't telling me what to do. I'm not on somebody else's script.
Marion Roy, how do you think about this? Do you think there's something primal at the root of this question?
I think that it really is thought about more as you get older. I think when people get into their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, people are living much longer these days, that you begin to think about how much time do you have left in your life and what are you going to do with it. And I think that's a very, very difficult decision because there are so many things that play into it. You may have just recently retired. You may be ill. You may have decided that you want to move to Florida and play golf the rest of your life. And I think different people value different things, so it's really something that's very varied.
So I have a sense that we make judgments about this kind of thing. If someone says, I just met someone who suddenly faced, he's not old, but he suddenly faced a lot of free time through a life circumstance. And he has been playing golf like mad. And I keep searching his face, searching his conversation for the sign that he's I mean, this has been going on for several years now, that he's finally tired of it. No, he's not. And I thought, why am I doing that? Of course I'm somebody who cares about meaning and purpose. On the other hand, I look at him and I think, what am I doing? Am I judging you? Because this energizes you. This is what your passion is. And so your life has a kind of forward momentum.
My husband has been retired for 3 years now. He's the happiest man on earth. Faith knows him. There is nobody happier. Now, he does a textbook, and he works, constantly reading and thinking about, is this a good poem for this? Is this a short story? He's always sort of on the clock, if he's reading a book. But really, he's out in the yard. He's going for walks. He's traveling. I was worried. I'll be perfectly honest. I'm 57. He's 69. And I was worried when he retired. I thought, is he going to be one of those people that you hear about who's going to, look for something to do or be ready for an assignment? This is somebody who's worked incredibly hard since he was 15 years old. He'd never had a day off since he was 15 years old. He is now somebody who – and he doesn't have, a lot of activities. He has these big overall projects. It's not like he's scheduling a lot of things, but he is the happiest I have ever known him. And it's not because he didn't love his work. He loved teaching. He loved writing as a scholar. He was ready to give it up. And maybe part of it because it was his decision. No one is happier.
So he's master of his domain.
He's master. And I do not, and I am not interested in retiring. So even though I see him so happy, it did not rub off on me.
Again, I want to stress that this isn't just about retirement. This can happen to people through life circumstances at absolutely any age. You can be young and have a relative pass away and you inherit tons of money and you are suddenly master of your domain. This is just part of the human condition where you're trying to figure out, if you've got free time, how to spend it.
I'll tell you the time in my life when this was the most important. And it's interesting because I'm retired and doing tons of different stuff. I stayed home for 12 years bringing up my children. They started school and I wasn't working and I didn't know what to do with myself. I think that was the period of time when I was the most lost.
So you had an identity through your children, and then do you feel like that disappeared?
I think it disappeared, and clearly I had worked before I had my children, but I was home for so long that I really didn't know what I wanted to do.
How'd you find your way out of that?
I found my way out of that by finding a job.
A paid job.
A paid job, yeah.
So does that matter? Does it matter if it's paid or not paid? If you can afford not to have it be paid, does it matter? Is the point to have purpose in finding something or finding a passion, which means, as Dr. Nancy Horn says on the show all the time, something that gives you tremendous energy?
I think it depends on whether you need the money or not.
Well, I know, obviously. But so that aside, because we know that.
What's become part of our identity, you brought up identity at the beginning, Faith, is that, we say to somebody, where do you live? Where do you come from? What do you do? I mean, it's part of sort of the way we profile somebody, even if it's at a cocktail party. I mean, we're just trying to figure out who that person is. We ask what their activities are. So if somebody says, I golf, you say, like your friend who had, the privilege of being able to do what he likes to do, then you say, okay, does that mean you're a golfer? We then said, do you golf professionally? If somebody says, I knit, I mean, just like, are you a crafts person? Are you do you sell your stuff? I mean, it's like, does it have a public life? We're asking not even about the activity, but does it have an existence outside your pleasure doing it? And I think that is a sort of an odd question to ask. In England, they would never ask, what do you do?
Say, this is, according to lots of people, a distinctly American thing that we are very focused on achievement. Even in our leisure, you're supposed to be achieving something. And so if you dare to say that in you're older and doing or through circumstance you face quote unquote retirement and you ever dared to say, I plan to do nothing, people would keel over. They would look with horror at you. And I think, isn't that interesting? For some, I don't know how long people can do nothing, you know, but still, you're just not even allowed to say it.
But I mean, if somebody came up and said, okay, well, what? Okay, I've got, 5 years off. I got a grant. I got a MacArthur grant. It gives me 5 years. I don't even know what a MacArthur grant gives you, but I got the Genius grant. It gives me 5 years to do something.
It gives you money.
Right, gives you money. But I don't think you have to check in. I think they just give you the money. You don't actually have to promise to do anything for them.
Because
you've achieved.
You've achieved something that looks like, I think, it's ongoing.
Right. But let's say that they say, what are you going to do with those 5 years? And somebody says, well, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to catch up on every old movie I have ever wanted to see. They're not going to write a book on old movies. They're not going to give lectures on old movies. If they say, now, would we say that's a waste of time? Or we'd say that's great. What a, you know, again, an enviable thing to be doing. Would we think, oh, that's so sad? I mean, if that's what somebody really wants to do, as opposed to, because what you just said is right, we think of things that are achievements. So if somebody says, I want to swim the English Channel, we go, okay, that's great. That's a goal. That's a measurable goal. But if somebody says, I'm going to watch Hoarders, I'm really just going to sit down and watch Hoarders and maybe make some Ghirardelli brownies while I'm at it. That's my plan. We think that's not an achievement. That's an indulgence. And we as Americans don't think indulgence is good for you.
We're really talking about values, though, and going back to that period of my life, if I had said to someone, I'm a mother, I mean, we talk about in our society that if you're a mother and you're bringing up children, or if you're a father at home bringing up your children, is that a value? Is that something that we feel is an important thing to do? And a lot of people don't think that's something very significant.
So how is it that we live in a world that doesn't see that being a parent is the same as being the CEO of a corporation? How is that still possible after people, so many countless people have experienced this? There's a stunning amount of work and coordination and activity, a job that never stops, and usually for very little pay.
Right.
So how is that possible? So
I never faced the reality of then going to look for a job because I had a degree and I could go and find something. But there are people who go on interviews who have been parents and done 50 million things and coordinate things and all the incredible things that you have to do as a parent. And they'll go for an interview for a job and be asked, what did you do? And it's looked at as you didn't do anything the last 10 years. And I think that's really sad. I think we underestimate a lot of things that people do, and it's not just parenting.
I'm Faith Middleton with Gina Bereke of Storrs, Connecticut, and Marion Roy of Hamden, Connecticut, talking about finding life purpose and meaning if you, at any age, are given the gift of lots of free time. We are going to take your calls at 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. We'll take a short break and then come right back. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can see delicious recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, and more, including a short essay about what we're discussing on the show. Click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. My guests are Gina Bereke and Marion Roy, both Connecticut people, and we got into this extended conversation recently about free time and what it provides you with. So that we're talking about people at any age and what happens. So what is wasting time? I'm coming back to that primal question again. What is a waste of time?
Well, I think it's interesting that we talk about free time and then we talk about wasting, because we don't usually talk about wasting what's free. Right? I mean, you think, oh, it's free. I can do anything I want with it. But wasting time really is a terrifying idea. One of the times that we did the Seven Deadly Sins, Faith, I told you that my greatest fear was sloth. right? That was the biggest fear that I had of a vice. And I'm fine with gluttony. I'm fine with lust. Sloth scares me. And that's because that is about wasting time. And because time is, if you think about it as a commodity, which is, I think, how we're talking about it today, it's something you can't get back. Once it's gone, it's gone. You know, the hourglass is as a song goes, you know, it's nailed to the table. The sands fall only one way. You can't go, oh, wait a minute, I wasted those 3 years and I didn't mean to. I was in a bad relationship I shouldn't have been in. I was making myself miserable. I was, you know, heading in the wrong direction. I was doing whatever. You could go back and look at that time and say that was a waste of time. And of course, you know, with therapy and good medication, you can go back and look at those points in your life and say, but that made me into who I am today. You retrieve it. What happens is that there are certain things, moments in your life that are like pawn tickets that you could only redeem later on. So you understand why that wasn't a waste, even as you were going through it.
Nori Faith Middleton with Gina and Marion. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a comment regarding how tied we are as Americans to our professions. When I was a teenager 25 years ago, and I would tell my parents that I met a new friend, especially a new boyfriend, they would always ask me, really, what does his father do? And it would make me crazy. What does that have to do with anything?
What does his father do? That's so interesting.
Yeah, and now that I'm a parent of a teenage daughter, I find myself wondering the same thing. Like, that's going to give me this person's identity, what their father does.
You think that's generational?
No, she does it.
Oh, you do it also?
Well, probably out of learned behavior, but
she
yeah.
does it with her daughter, she said.
Makes so, my daughter crazy now.
So, what do you think, what are you getting at when you ask that question?
I don't know. I guess it tells you how the person was brought up or, you know, a class or I don't know.
Well, I think it has more to do with class than how they're brought up. I mean, somebody could be, you know, the chief financial officer and could still keep, you know, dogs chained in the basement.
Exactly. Right. It doesn't really give you a lot of information, but I guess the thought to it was that you could somehow tell who a person was.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nori. I'm glad you called.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Me too. 203-776-WNPR. We're talking about finding life purpose and meaning if at any age you're given the gift of lots of free time.
I think we were talking about wasting time, and I think that that is such a personal issue. I think it means something different to every person. And we become very judgmental about it. And I know I do. I see people playing golf in Florida, and I think, that's a waste of your life. That's my opinion. They're perfectly happy. So I think we have to be very, very careful about how we define wasting time because it's different for everyone.
You're saying it's a personal decision, though. You know, here we are. This gets back to purpose and meaning. How does that come to you? We certainly know from every possible angle that we can look at this that human connection is accounts for so much of feeling alive and feeling that you have a sense of purpose and meaning. We see people trying to maintain brain function, that right. fluid intelligence that we were just talking about on the show with the author of Smarter, saying that those brain training techniques, a lot of them actually work, and your fluid intelligence can increase by 10 to 30%, some people 60%. What is it that accounts for a sense? What keeps us from doing that thing? The number one reason that people have regret at the end of their lives when they're terminal, they say to hospice nurses, my regret has to do with I didn't get to be the most myself.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? Is that connected to this question of free time and how you define yourself, what you're going to do with it?
It would be interesting if you did a survey of people of like different classes, different ages, and asked them, What is free time? What motivates you? What are the kinds of things that you think are important in your life? And I think you'd get such varied answers. It would be amazing.
I bet that people would say the same thing. Everybody's going to say that what – no, because people are dishonest when they answer these things. People are going to – they are. Everybody's going to say what's most important is family and friends. I want to spend quality time, which is another meaningless statement. You know, quality time – really, I think quality time is ridiculous. What's quality time mean? I want to spend quality time with my family and friends. I want to, again, do more good for the community than I ever would. I want to get real pleasure and, you know, find my creativity. Everybody says that. Everybody knows that's the right answer. I don't care what neighborhood you're from. Everybody's going to say that. That's going to be 99% of that isn't true because that's not what we do when we have free time. We go buy corn dogs at a state fair. We actually do other stuff.
However, I think I understand what that means, quality time. People are really saying, if I can be, you know, this all sounds so cliche, but if I'm truly present, alive with another person, and we're right in this moment together, the way actors are when they're playing a part, the way you know it when you see it. When you're with somebody and you're really listening. Gina, we just read your Hartford Current column about your relationship with your mother. I was so present during that. I could have just been babbling words. I could have just been, you know, feel like a trip in the car with somebody is over. And I think back, was I there? No. Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that we do? That makes us feel the most alive, the most there. Isn't that at the root of this?
Well, I think, Gina, what you just said were generalizations. And if you break that down to what people actually do under all of those categories, you're going to find the kinds of things that are important. And I don't think that they're just saying what everyone else wants to hear. I think it's true what they're saying, and it would be so different. You know, it's kind of like, those are my goals, and what are the activities that are going to be under that? What are the kinds of things that you're going to do to really be with your family? How does that work for you? And it's going to be different for everyone, and I think that it's true what they're saying.
So we're asking this question here. I mean, Gina, I know why you say it, because we do all make that statement. I'm not sure we all understand how to get to.
I don't think anybody does. I mean, that what we've got is we have, again, what I think is that we've bought the package deal in life, as we all have. I'm not saying that I'm any different. I'm right there with the package deal. It's not like other people I'm talking about. That we know what we need. We actually know that having good friends will keep us healthier and alive longer than, you know, being disconnected and alienated. We've read the studies. We're part of the conversation. But I also think that when we go back to having an hour, I mean, sometimes it's just really, or having a week, that we don't just sit there and go, okay, I'm going to go see my 20 best friends. I'm really thinking I'm going to TJ Maxx. I'm going to walk I don't have hobbies. And actually, when I say that to people, which is sort of, you know, attached to what we're talking about, I have no hobbies. I don't knit. I do not run. I do not golf. Golf is getting a bad rap today. You know, I don't play tennis. I don't do any structured play. I am bad with structured play. I eat out. I have coffee, I drink wine, I shop. Those are the things I like to do. All of them, when they involve other doing it with people I adore and find interesting, that makes it absolutely wonderful. Then those are fabulous.
But those things are giving you a lot of energy, right?
Yeah.
You love them.
I love them.
So you do what you love with another person. How's that not going to be fun? How's that wasting time?
But it doesn't. That doesn't go towards any. No one could say that shopping at TJ Maxx is an achievement.
But being with your friend,
right,
and doing something that energizes the two of you,
right,
this is a kind of recreation. It's about art. It's about
It
is about art. It is about picking things in that store that you think, I mean, really clothes. We're picking clothes because we say, I want to think I look great in this thing. It's an art.
Okay.
That's an art
I
form.
Love this. I'm taking
See
it.
What I'm saying?
I'm writing this down. It is an art.
All right. Ellen, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show. We're talking about just by chance you're given the gift of a ton of free time. How do you get to purpose and meaning? Does that matter? Go ahead.
Okay, Faith, I'm a big, big fan of your show.
Thank you.
When I do cook, which is rare, I always make sure to have the radio right next to the kitchen. So I wanted to say that I've been retired for 4.5 years now from a very busy cardiology practice. And the first 2 years, I had a lot of questions. I even sought out a counselor to make sure that I was going to be doing the right things with all my free time. And what I've come to believe after 4.5 years is pretty much I'm doing exactly what I want to do, which is, other than 3 hours a week at the gym, is all my own time. And what it's done is freed me up to do a lot of things that may not have been come to me had I not had this free time. So
give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, I have neighbors who and friends who have maybe been sick or needed a ride to a doctor, and I'm available. So I just do it. I have a granddaughter, and if my son and daughter-in-law are in a pinch and need me, I'm there. And I love the freedom of having those choices made so easy for me now. I don't have to juggle a lot. There are days when I just, if it's a rainy day, sometimes I just feel like sitting and watching TV and staying in a robe all day. So it's once in a while, but that's okay too. And what I think is a waste of time is doing things that you don't want to do. And if you have the freedom of having time, then I think what's a waste of time is doing what you don't want.
So just for a second on that type. First of all, your life sounds terrific to me. This idea of having as an end goal not doing what you don't want to do is tricky to me. I know that I give the gift of love to some people by doing things that I have no interest in doing. It is because I see it as an obligation to my friend or my partner to do that particular thing. It's what you do. And so how do you handle that? What do you think about that?
Well, there's very little left that is, for me, is in that category right now. Although my husband and I, excuse me, took care of, I'm sorry, Faith, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
My husband and I took care of sick parents, sick aunts, sick brothers. We really had our hands full for about 8 years in a row. So we did a lot of things that was inconvenient time-wise, certainly drained our energy. But at this point, my life is quite uncomplicated, and I'm actually, I do my best to keep it uncomplicated.
Mm-hmm. You're luxuriating in that.
Well, yes, I am.
Thank you, Ellen, so much for calling the show. Very, very interesting comments. Thank you. And keep cooking.
Thank you, Faith.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye. 203-776-9677, the easy way to remember, 203-776-WNPR. I'm with Gina Barreca of Storrs, Marion Roy of Hamden, Connecticut, talking about finding life purpose and meaning if you at any age are given the gift of lots of free time. Don't you both know that every time I say it, I imagine that you're listening and saying to yourself, yes, I'd like to have that problem. But it does happen to all kinds of people. We see a zillion people reaching quote-unquote retirement age. We see people inheriting money. We see losing jobs. You're suddenly faced with a lot of free time through the surprises of life, and you have to figure out what to do with it. You know, job loss is one thing. A lot of people go out and try and find another one. Sometimes they can't. and you're faced with this amount of time, how do you have a sense of purpose and meaning with the free time you have? Does it have to be an achievement? What do you go toward if you can't find that thing, but you see other people have it and you want it? You can't put your finger on it. How do you go toward that? 203-776-WNPR. Christine, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Christine.
This is a very interesting topic because I'm right in the middle of doing what you're suggesting. I'm 45 and I have three teenagers, but I sold my business in January and I was very successful. And now I have a lot of time on my hands that isn't, of course, you know, taking care of them when they're in and out the door. But I keep thinking of something that Irma Bombeck said, and it is, when I greet God, I want to do it knowing that I used everything that he gave me, and I'm not done. So now I'm going to go and get my master's degree.
Okay. And not for any particular purpose, just because whatever you're studying interests you.
Yes, actually. I've been writing all my life, and I was in the interior design business before this, and I've always written, but I never really thought about it as a career or something anyone else would be interested in reading. And then I started taking writing classes, workshops, and lo and behold, people do want to hear what I have to say, and I'm really interested in what they have to say. So now I'm getting my master's degree in writing.
So it's about that. That's about communicating, staying connected to other people, it sounds like to me.
That's correct. And yeah. I've also been a peer counselor for cancer survivors. I've been a survivor for over a dozen years. And I just feel as though this is a real opportunity when you're given this gift of time, however much time it is. If it is not used to, I keep hearing about the achievement factor, so I'm trying not to say the word achievement, but to use it and to wring everything out of it that you can get, I think I would feel that I'd let myself down if I didn't take whatever I was given and wring everything out of it.
That's great.
Thank
I love that.
Thank you, Christine. Really appreciate you calling the show.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. We're going to take a short break. And then I know, Marion, you have a comment about this, and I can't wait. We'll be right back with Gina Bereka and Marion Roy talking about the gift of free time and what you do with it. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. I'm with Gina Bereka and Marion Roy, and we're talking about facing lots of free time, should that be your task, and lucky you is what I say. But it's tricky. It's very, very tricky, because let's say you find that you have lots of free time on your hands and you do all those things. You do nothing because you just want to be the master of your schedule. You just go by whim, which is a gorgeous thing to do. And then if you have a particular interest, you pursue that for a while, or you maybe watch TV, sports, you work out, you read the paper, you do whatever it is you want to do. And then after a while, you start to drum your fingers on the table. You think something is missing. How do you find that thing that gives you a sense of purpose or meaning, energy, whatever it might be, that makes you feel the most alive? How do you get there?
You just described my life.
Why?
I retired 5 years ago and thought, oh, this is going to be a wonderful opportunity. I can take care of my grandchild. I can take art classes. I have hobbies, and I can do all these hobbies, and it's going to be wonderful. And I did that for a few years, actually, and I had a good time. And then all of a sudden, I thought, drumming my fingers, what's next? What am I going to do? I'm not working in my profession that I always worked in my entire life as a counselor. I felt empty, and I felt like I needed to get back to doing something that I was used to doing and feeling successful. And it has a lot to do with identity. what you expect from yourself, what do you think you should be doing, and how do you feel about what you're doing, and does it fulfill you? And I went and I got another job. I mean, I got a job that was flexible and didn't tie me into a daily schedule, so I could still go to the gym and take a class.
And did that work?
Which is one. It's perfect. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely perfect.
Gina, you described this as the Peggy Lee moment.
Right. I think that people come to is that all there is? Remember the Peggy Lee song, Is That All There Is? So she sees the fire. She falls in love. And at the end of all of these big crisis experiences, she's left thinking, is this it? Is this all there is? And that I think that that goes back to, loops back to what you're talking about earlier, of people feeling like they feel they question whether they've justified their lives, right? Have I justified my time here? This is the allotment I've been given. You know, have I used it the best way that I can? And regrets, you know, at the end of life or at the end of everything. Now, when we talk about, you know, aging and then coming to ask different questions about how we've gone through life, I also think, and again, maybe it's just, you know, early morbidity, but even since we were kids, it was like a family line that was tomorrow was promised to no one. Tomorrow was promised to no one. I mean, you don't know how much time you have. You think, oh, okay, well, I'll retire and then I'll do all the rest of it. None of us know how much time we have. I mean, we better use the time that we have every day when, you know, everybody, and this is another cliche, but everybody has 24 hours. That's it. And so when people are always, you know, they ask, how do you do this? How do you manage? It's like you use the time. You choose to use the time in a certain way, and you use time for what you value. And if what you value is, again, for me, like you said, now I think of it as doing art in TJ Maxx, but if it's walking through TJ Maxx, having a nice meal, but then it's sitting down and writing for 2 hours. But writing for 2 hours, really writing for 2 hours, not thinking about writing for 2 hours, not researching writing for 2 hours, but sitting down with my fingers on the keyboard, seeing what comes out in 2 hours of real work every day. Nobody's telling me I have to do that. It's something that I do. And so when we talk about having to prove to ourselves, not to anybody else. I don't think anybody else is really keeping such a close account of what we do with our time. We're really doing that for ourselves. I don't even think we're worried about the judgment from other people. We have an internal accountant that we're, and that probably does go back to your Neanderthal paleo eating, not on a diet, but that's because they was paleo or eating rocks. You know, that was it. I'll have meat and an herb. Otherwise, I have to eat this granite. So that was their diet. You know, that they needed to make sure that the waking hours they had to make use of when there was light, because then they had to go sleep in a cave and try not to get attacked. So you had to make use of the time just to survive. And I think we've got that. And that drive isn't just boredom or ennui or a sense of, you know, Weltschmerz, life, you know, world weariness. It's a primitive thing to justify why we're here, what we're doing. And if you're not having fun and or making somebody else happier, I don't know how much it's worth doing. I'd rather stay in my robe all day than go to a committee meeting that's going to do nothing.
This gets right to sleepwalking through life. Stress can be so high. You have so many demands on you. You might be juggling so many things. Whatever it is that causes this, I call it, I certainly have done this, and it's one of the major regrets at any moment in my life where I spot myself, you're sleepwalking through whatever situation. And I think, what a shame, what a waste. And Marian, you got at this during the break by saying, it's amazing if you find out that you have a terminal illness, how the first thing you do is start to think about, what do I do with the time I have left?
I've talked with many people who have cancer and have survived it, and it really seems to change their thinking. And you begin to think about, how much time do I have left? And it has nothing to do with age at that point. It has to do with just a sense that what you were saying, Gina, you have 24 hours. Everyone has 24 hours because you don't know what's going to happen. And how are you going to use that time and what's value to you? And I think the most difficult part as we're talking, as I'm starting to think, is how do you decide what's value to you? How are you supposed to feel when you're doing something and you know this is what you're supposed to be doing and you're not, quote, wasting time. And it is a value.
We used to have AA members, Alcoholics Anonymous members, on this show about once a month. We did that for about 7 years. And one of the things, one of the tenets, we'll say, in AA was when you were hurting or felt lost, to go out and help another person, and that would restore you to yourself. And so, you know, for many reasons, obviously about connection, putting your energy toward another makes you forget your own self-absorption, your own pain, and suddenly life comes back into balance. So this is interesting. Eileen Faith Middleton with Gina Barek and Marion Roy. Go ahead, Eileen.
Hi, Faith and Company. Thank you for this topic. It's wonderful. I turned 59 last year, and I retired from teaching. And I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop, and maybe it's just because it's been a year, but I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm very busy, and I have my granddaughter twice a week. I am available to family if they need me. I volunteer a couple places. I travel, yoga, quilting. Sometimes I'm a little bit too busy.
Uh-huh.
But what's interesting is I think I'm wondering if it's harder for men to retire than for women. And has it always been? My husband has changed his retirement date about 3 times, and I believe he's going to retire this year, although I wouldn't be surprised if he changed his mind. But I said to him, you know, I feel I will always be a teacher, even if I'm not getting paid, and he will always be a clinical social worker, even if he's not getting paid for it. And our life goes on, and God willing, we have good health and a long, healthy retirement. But
what makes you say, Eileen, or wonder about whether men are different in terms of
because of my husband, and I see other men they're off for a couple of months. They don't have a lot that they've planned to do, and then they feel they need to look for a pay job, and I see that happening more with men than women. Maybe that's not accurate, but.
Huh. I wonder how this connects with friendships among men versus friendships among women, the value that a gender, I mean, this is a crazy sexist thing to say probably, but you know, is there, an ease of connection? Is there a difference there for men and women? I hear this from my men friends who are, you know, very interested in having men friends, and they have a hard time finding them.
I also think that there really is this sort of straitjacket of identity for men, that they really are only of value if they're earning a paycheck. And that's something, there are different kinds of, again, there are straitjackets of femininity, but that's really one of the straitjackets of masculinity, is that a man is only worth what he's bringing home on a paycheck per week, you know, before deductible.
And so, I think, unfortunately, that's changing, and that a lot of women are tying into that as well, that that's their identity, and if you stop working, then there's nothing else left.
203-776. Thank you so much, Eileen. Really appreciate your call. 203-776-9677. Easy way to remember, 203-776-WNPR. Jerry, Faith and the Gang, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Jerry. Go ahead. Great, thanks. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm still thinking about some very early on in your conversation, but so I just wanted to comment or ask a question. Why do we care so much what everybody else thinks of what we're doing? And why do we care? You know, you were saying how everybody wants to know what you're doing with your life, or what your father does for, you know, your boyfriend's father does for a living. So why do we care so much about that? We seem so much wrapped up in what other people are doing, we're having a hard time with ourselves.
Well, Jerry, if you have unraveled that puzzle, if you have solved that issue of how not to care about what other people think, I am going to give you, I don't know what, a Nobel Prize? I don't know. I can't think of an honor great enough for you. Because,
well,
you know, we're creatures of language. Jerry, sorry, go ahead.
If my phone number's on your caller ID, then
we are. I think we're creatures of language, and so what we say to each other matters, and it registers. And so, just as I heard the Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor say, it hurts a person from another culture when you say, where are you from? And that person says, I'm from, you know, South Carolina. And they say, no, where are you really from? In other words, you know what I mean? So we're creatures of language. If someone comes up to you at a party and says, you know, well, are you a professional collector of salt shakers? You know, I mean, there's no, there's just no way not to feel a little bad about that. So thank you, Jerry. This is you spun us in an interesting direction. Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
But, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is identity. And if you start thinking about where does identity come from, when children are born, the way that they find out about who they are is what they hear and see from other people. That's how we form our identity. So when children are 1, 2, 3 years old and people say to them, oh, you're so successful with this, you build blocks so well, you smile so beautifully, your hair is lovely. This is how children find out who they are. And as adults, I think we continue with that.
But you see, but that leads a lot of people to thinking that they're really good at drawing ponies. They really.
But they might
really,
be.
Yeah,
they
I know, be. But it's really tough then. I'm going to go back to my passion because, you know, my aunts and uncles loved, by the way, I drew little My Little Pony, even though I didn't always make it into the lines. And sometimes, yes, when the time is your own, you can draw all the ponies you want. You can sing and dance. You can do, you know, you can go back to, in a way, I think, it, and I'm only sort of half kidding, but the really innocent exploration of stuff that you're not good at, where if you're part of the workforce and in a competitive workspace, you need to be the best at what you do. And when the work, the time is your own, you can do it and not be good at it.
Uh-huh.
And that's great.
And you know, we were just talking with the author of Smarter, and who said that these brain improvement devices that are online and, you know, in stores, a lot of them are quite effective. And we were talking about fluid intelligence, how they can increase your fluid intelligence level and all that stuff. But one of the things that they see from all the research is that people who do lots of things that are new to them, that this increases intelligence, not only the traditional kind, but also emotional intelligence, which is so important. And you see it, I call it multiple intelligence, you know, increases across the board. Something new, something new. Gina, that means failure.
Right.
Because
always.
And you have to be okay with it, you know, because you're learning.
And that's when we talk about free time, maybe that's what free means. Free is to fail. As opposed to not have to achieve because somebody is marking you, because they're paying you, because they're whatever. You could do it. You could draw ponies. They're not so hot. You throw them out.
It might mean failure, but we tend to do things that we're successful at. And that doesn't mean that we're always the best at what we're doing. Some people won't do anything unless they're the very best. I used to play tennis with a friend. She wouldn't play tennis unless she could play really well. Otherwise, she wouldn't play at all. And these are the kinds of things that we do learn from childhood, even though we can't identify it.
I was thinking about Dr. Horn being on the show and talking about individuals are, she thinks of them as plants, that certain plants, depending on the species, have certain conditions that make them thrive. One's a lot of water, one's not too much. Sunlight varies. If you can figure out the conditions that make you thrive and put yourself in those conditions as much as you can, you're in pretty good shape. And maybe, you know, and that includes helping other people, working on making life a better place for you and the people who come after you, and all those things that connect to meaning and purpose. Mm-hmm. But it also can include collecting animal salt shakers, you know. we have a minute. Frank, you want to make a very quick comment?
Yeah, I want the Nobel Prize, but I also want to let you know that the best way to not care what other people think is to go to karaoke. And to get up and perform there. And I just want to make a quick shout out to all of my unemployed friends out there that you should be doing art while you're unemployed.
Yeah,
that sounds
great. Even if you've never done it before, right, Frank?
Everyone's an artist, I believe.
And me too.
And I did that when I was unemployed for too long, I have to say. But I appreciate that I had the time to do that.
I do too. I do too.
That's a wonderful comment.
Thank you so much. And thank you to Marion Roy of Hamden, Connecticut, to Gina Bereka of Storrs, Connecticut, whose column is appearing right now in the Hartford Courant, in the paper and online, about having a mother who perhaps didn't love you in the best way that she could as Mother's Day approaches. As always, this show is about the richness of life. Find the books, people, great recipes, value wines, and cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org. Click on Programs in New Haven. I'm Faith Middleton.